Local news, culture, and NPR.
From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farm and Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. This week on Farm and Country, join me at the breathtaking Shohola Falls in Shohola, Pennsylvania. Did you know that Pike County is home to 18 watersheds? These watersheds are so important to providing the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley with clean drinking water. I chat with Rachel Marks from the Pike County Conservation District about why waterways like Shohola Falls matter and how you can step up to protect them. Plus, have you seen a giant elephant in Jeffersonville lately? Well, Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett looked into what it's doing there and the story of elephant migration that inspired it all. All of that in Keith Hubbard's StarTalk report, but first, news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. President Trump is in Scotland this weekend, visiting his golf resorts and squeezing in some meetings with UK and EU leaders. A major security operation is underway for his visit, with officers from forces around the UK brought in to support Scottish police. Some locals, though, are concerned about the scale and cost of the operation. NPR's Fatemah Al-Kassab reports from Edinburgh.
President Trump's visit to his golf courses on opposite sides of the country has prompted a major police operation around Scotland, which is expected to cost Scottish taxpayers millions of dollars. Kerry Walsh from Glasgow says she's not sure it's worth it.
So much is being spent on him being here, and I don't know what the benefit of him being here is, if I'm honest.
The Scottish Police Union says resources are stretched, and it may take officers much longer to respond to other incidents over the weekend as a result. Protesters are planning what they are calling a festival of resistance to the president's visit, with demonstrations underway in several Scottish cities. Fatemah Al-Kassab, NPR News, Edinburgh.
The controversy surrounding the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein has followed President Trump to Scotland, but Trump told reporters upon arriving there that he's focused on making deals, not on conspiracy theories. Officials at New Jersey's Joint Base McGuire-Dix-Lakehurst have not received orders to prepare space for a federal immigration detention center. That's according to two congressmen who visited the military base. Kenneth Burns of member station WHYY reports on the visit after Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth notified the congressman that he authorized the base for use by ICE.
Hegseth informed New Jersey Democrats Herb Conaway and Donald Norcross last week of the move. Conaway's district includes the base.
In fairness to the commanders on the base, they are as much in the dark as we are about what may happen.
Norcross, as well as Conaway, took issue with what they called a lack of transparency from the Trump administration.
You've seen the reports from across this country on how we are not doing the right job of informing not only members of Congress, but our own nation on what's taking place.
Both have also expressed concerns over how the core missions of the base could be affected by housing an immigration detention center. For NPR News, I'm Kenneth Burns in Wrightstown, New Jersey.
A heat wave that has much of the southeast in its grip has health officials warning of the dangers of extreme heat. Dr. Alok Patel is a Stanford Children's Health pediatrician.
Always have a buddy system if you're going out and make sure people know where you're going if you do have to go outside in the heat. But it's best to stay away from those peak sunshine hours and try to go outside and play in the early morning or the evening.
Forecasters say excessive heat will expand from the mid-south to the east coast today, with the peak of this heat wave likely to come early next week. The southeast could see feels-like temperatures topping 110 degrees. This is NPR News.
I'm Catherine Marr, CEO of NPR. At the White House's request, Congress just voted to eliminate all federal funding for public media. This decision by Congress hurts communities across the country. It means fewer voices that dare to ask difficult questions or reflect on the full richness of who we are as a nation. Fewer stories about what connects us and brings us closer together. And for millions, especially those in rural areas, it means losing access to trusted local news, emergency alerts, and the everyday connection and companionship that public media provides. But here's what will never change. Our commitment to you. NPR and public media exist to serve the American public, to bring you rigorous journalism without fear or favor, to connect communities in moments of both crisis and joy. Public media has always been powered by the people it serves, people like you and me, who believe in a free and independent press. So I'm asking you to act now. Your donation will make an immediate difference. You will ensure public media remains free and accessible to all. You will enable this essential American service to survive and thrive. Please go to this station's website and give what you can. We are here because of you, to serve you, and with your help, we always will be.
Radio Catskill needs you now more than ever. Please stand with us. Keep public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at JoyceFDN.org. This is NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. I wanted to start with an important update. You've probably heard by now, but last week, Congress voted to claw back $1.1 billion for public radio. And that directly affects us here at Radio Catskill. These cuts mean that we now have to make up 25% of our budget. This is money that we have to raise so that we can continue delivering the programming and your favorite shows like Farming Country that you have loved and rely on and count on for your source of local news. And when I started here at Radio Catskill earlier this year, it really only took me a couple days to realize how special the station is. The local news journalism is rigorous. The team and staff are so wonderful. But it's really the community that makes this station so meaningful and, to me, worth fighting for. So, Radio Catskill, we are not going anywhere, but we do need your help to sustain public radio and ensure that we can continue to grow. Thank you to so many of our Farming Country listeners who have already stepped up to donate. You can give now at WJFFradio.org. Now, let's see if this sounds familiar. Recognize the sound of that? It's the intoxicating sound of water gushing down Shohola Falls in Pike County, Pennsylvania. And it's where I met Rachel Marks, watershed specialist of the Pike County Conservation District, earlier this week.
We are at Shohola Falls here in Shohola, and it is so stunning. So this is where the lake kind of outfall comes out and joins the Shohola Creek down below. But it's also big for fishermen, so this is actually stocked trout waters. So there are a bunch of people fishing up there and stuff, so yeah.
Do you ever see some of the people who are fishing out here or hiking?
Yeah, so we've seen some fishermen. We actually do studies of the streams in Pike County. So we do, in the fall, some electrofishing. So we do actually get to see some of the actual fish that live in the waters here in Pike County and Shohola Creek.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Marks works with Pike County on waterway and land conservation efforts, like keeping an eye out on erosion and sediment control. Pike County is home to 18 watersheds that are so important to providing our region with clean drinking water. Here is my conversation with Rachel Marks about all things watersheds, from how climate change is impacting them to how to keep a watershed-friendly home. Why don't we start with, if you want to just explain what exactly a watershed is and how you interact with them in your work.
Yeah, that's perfect, actually. So, yeah, what is a watershed specialist even? So watersheds are The way that I like to describe it is kind of a common drainage area. So it's basically an area in which all of the water that falls through rain or maybe runs down a river eventually ends up at a common point, right? So for example, Pike County, we're in the larger Delaware River watershed. So that means that any water from streams, rivers, rain events will eventually make its way down to the Delaware River.
And, you know, just out of curiosity, well, one, I love the title of watershed specialist. I think that's such a fun role. How did you become so knowledgeable about watersheds?
Oh, my gosh. So I did go to Kutztown University. So I have a 4 years degree in ecology. But a lot of the learning is really on the job stuff. You know, Pike County is a really beautiful, special county. Northeastern Pennsylvania as a whole is just, will always have a place in my heart. But with that, it comes, you know, very unique situations, right? So we have a lot of forested land in Pike County, which is fantastic and helps protect a lot of our water bodies with all of those nice trees and greenery. And with that, though, we maybe are a little more concerned about things like invasive plant species and things like that. So it really influences the things that matter to the people of Pike County and then the things that I go ahead and learn more about so that I can help the people of Pike County with those issues.
Well, I was so excited to meet you even before we had emailed because you had written this fantastic article about geology and how geology affects, you know, the watersheds. And I learned how watersheds can get bigger and smaller. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So like I said, watersheds are common drainage points, right? So they really depend heavily on our geologic formations, like our mountains, directly influence, you know, where the water's going to run off to, right? So if you're at the top of a mountain and it rains on, you know, at the top, the water's either going to go down one side or down the other side, right? So that's kind of what we like to imagine as our watershed divide. Mm-hmm. And that's a really big deal when it comes to determining the sizes and shapes of our watersheds. You know, and like I said, they do nest within one another. So, there can be very small watersheds that go into bigger and bigger and bigger watersheds. And it really just depends, again, on that geology.
You spend a lot of time by the water and taking care of the land and the waterways. I'm curious how, if at all, you've seen climate change impact our watersheds.
We definitely have. I mean, so especially this year, we've seen a lot of more intense rain events happening more frequently, right? And that intensity of that rain really influences the force of the water that hits the surface. But then oftentimes when we do have a lot of water all at once, that rain doesn't get the chance to kind of soak back into the ground. When it is really fast, it kind of is more likely to become runoff and pick up, you know, sediment and some other items as well. And then with that, you know, we've seen, of course, in the last several years, an increase in development in our area. And that can also add to some of our runoff concerns, right? So as we develop more areas, we are removing some natural spaces and maybe putting in some more what we like to call impervious areas. So those are areas like parking lots, rooftops, things like that, that really don't allow natural water to slow down and soak into the ground. It really just runs off and can sometimes gain speed or pick up things from the roadways and stuff of that nature.
I want to spend a little bit of time talking about what we're seeing at the federal level and how that's kind of impacting possibly your work or even just Pennsylvania locally. The Trump administration has cut billions of dollars in federal grants and programming that directly impact, you know, the environment, climate, et cetera. I'm curious if at all, this is impacting your work locally or any of the partner organizations you work with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So thankfully, a lot of my funding comes from the state, which is right now very stable. However, we do work with a lot of organizations at the federal level. So commonly, one of our big partners right now is the Natural Resource Conservation Service, or NRCS. And they're responsible for a ton of technical assistance with agriculture, even as it comes to implementing projects. So we do a lot of work with them, to design new agricultural best management practices for our farmers in our area. That's not an area that we have expertise in when it comes to the specific designs and stuff like that. So unfortunately, with the lack of funding that's available to the people of Pike County through funding cuts to NRCS, as well as reduction in staff causing less availability for technical assistance. And then that does come down to the local level. So we do rely heavily on them for different funding sources, like they have an EQIP grant, and we're also doing an agricultural conservation assistance program right now. And we do work heavily with them on some of the design aspects, some of the technical assistance. So that could cause unavailability of funds and assistance to our local Pike County residents, or in the very least, I'm assuming some sort of delay.
That's really unfortunate to hear that potentially technical assistance, which directly impact residents, could be a potential loss for you guys. I'm curious what you're hearing from the community about what they need right now.
Yeah, we have actually started really trying to educate our community about drinking water and source water protection lately. Pike County is 100% dependent on groundwater for our daily water needs. So that means every single person in Pike County, if they want to run the sink, if they want to get in the shower, that water is going to come at the end of the day from groundwater. And it's hard to envision it, right? Because we stand above the surface all the time. It's not something that we see. But it is also susceptible to human activity, right? So we are trying to raise awareness on that. But we do work a lot with EPA on stuff like that. And we work with Pennsylvania DEP. So we'll see how it all shakes out as time goes on here. But we are trying to bring also, like I said, some agricultural programs to Pike County and make it so that, you know, we don't have a ton of agriculture in Pike County. We have a lot of forests, like I said. But we're trying to make that program more accessible to Pike County residents. So perhaps maybe looking at forestry practices a little bit more under that umbrella as opposed to traditional agriculture, like having a beef farm.
Well, that actually leads me really nicely into my next question, just in terms of what are some best tips or advice that you have for everyday residents that they can do to also take care of their land?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of the biggest things that we like to try to drive home is that, you know, we talk about some of these heavy topics, but it's not all doom and gloom. There are things that people can do at their homes or in their workplaces or wherever you are to try to make a difference, right? So we talked about today about stormwater, right? So there are things you can do at your house to help mitigate that. For example, being cognizant of where your gutters may discharge water from storm events. So there are things like rain barrels that you can try to use at home to help save some water. Rain gardens are a beautiful way to help mitigate some storm flow. And we also encourage a variety of things like planting native species wherever you can, making sure that you maintain these nice green spaces when you can, and even things like maintaining your septic system, disposing of household hazardous waste properly. There's a million things that we can do. And we have a whole section on our website of different practices people can do. We actually have a brochure called A Homeowner's Checklist for a Watershed-Friendly Home. So those are some of the main things that we try to drive home, right? There are little things that we can all try to do to make a difference.
Pike County Conservation District has a few upcoming events this summer. They're hosting a Science on Tap event this Thursday, July 31st, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Drafts Bar and Grill. That is in Lake Ariel, Pennsylvania. And this month's Science on Tap is all about forestry for the future. You can find more educational resources and events on their website at www.pikeconservation.org. Up next, this week's Star Talk report from Keith Hubbard.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. The long-lasting Delta Aquarid meteor shower will reach its peak tonight. This meteor shower lasts for 6 weeks from July 12th to August 23rd each year. The waxing crescent moon will set a little after 10 p.m. tonight. This will leave most of the night moon-free, creating good conditions to watch for meteors. You can expect to see about 20 meteors per hour this week. The Delta Aquarids appear to radiate from a point below the Great Square of Pegasus, which rises in the northeast just before 10 p.m. The best time to go out will be after midnight. By this time, Pegasus will be halfway up in the eastern sky. Pegasus is most easily found by locating the big square that makes the body of the horse. Use the bright star Deneb in the constellation Cygnus as your guide to the square in Pegasus. From Deneb, look straight down toward the eastern horizon, and you will find the topmost corner of the square. Follow that line through the bottommost corner, and you will find the radiant point for the Delta Aquarids. The parent comet for the Delta Aquarids is not known for certain, but it is suspected that the meteors come from Comet 96P McColtz. A 2017 study found that the debris that causes the meteor shower left the comet 20,000 years ago. Watch for the old dust from this comet to crash into Earth's atmosphere over the next few nights. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future StarTalk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and StarTalk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks to Keith Hubbard for this week's report. Well, I am so excited because I have a very special guest today with me here in the studio. One of our summer reporting interns, Genevieve Hartnett. Hi, Genevieve.
Hey, Kim. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing even better knowing that I have a friend here in the studio with me. So, Genevieve, you have been doing such great reporting this summer. Really great stories for Radio Catskill, ranging from the impact of federal cuts to libraries to the toxic sludge in farming that we saw during the legislative session. How did you find yourself in journalism?
So I've always been interested in writing and culture and like cultural criticism. And I think for a while, I was always interested in making that central to my career. But I think journalism felt far away, I guess. It was a field I didn't totally know how to enter. And then I found this wonderful program through NYU's Arthur L. Carter Journalism Institute, and that I was able to do it flexibly and report on stories where I was, but also in New York City. And I just loved it. And I love particularly the audio aspect of it. I took classes on that in my time in graduate school, and just the way we're able to tell stories using sounds and music and different voices. I think you're able to communicate stories even stronger, I think. And like there's a whole other breadth of opportunities available to you. So, and here I am, and I'm learning so much being here and learning so much from you, Kim. You've been such a great example to all us interns, and yeah.
Yeah. And here you are. I mean, I totally agree. There's something about radio and audio that just feels so real and especially so fun for the listeners. And I understand that you have another story coming up that you want to share.
Yes. So I got the chance to cover a local story relating to Jeffersonville. So I don't know if you've been down on Main Street, but why is there an elephant in Jeffersonville? Well, the Jeffersonville Bake Shop has brought possibly the largest new neighbor to Sullivan County. A life-size replica of an elephant named Mama. If you are lucky enough to meet her, meet Mama, you might even be more surprised to learn that not only is she a part of the Great Elephant Migration, which is a conservation and art fundraising movement, but she has a really timely message about environmental awareness and coexistence between plants and animals. I spoke to Michael Huber, who's the co-owner of the Jeffersonville Bake Shop and also of its parent company, Heartwood, about why her message is so important for Jeffersonville and Sullivan County. And I also got the chance to go to the most recent Sunday market to talk with community members about their newest neighbor. If you've walked down Main Street in Jeffersonville this summer, you may have noticed a pretty big addition to the natural garden right by the Jeffersonville Bake Shop. Mama the Elephant, as she has been affectionately named by bake shop owners and husband and wife business team Michael Huber and Lauren Cycli, is a life-sized elephant replica structure that was created as part of the Great Elephant Migration.
So the Great Elephant Migration is the combination art exhibit fundraiser consciousness awareness project that had as one of its stops the Meatpacking District in New York City. We saw the full-on exhibition, which I think was over 100 elephants, really all throughout our neighborhood. He put earth down and plants and had the whole herd there with the patriarchs, the matriarchs, adolescent elephants, the babies. It was really amazing. And we learned about it and thought we wanted to support it by buying one of the elephants at the end.
That was Michael Huber. He told me as soon as he saw the elephant structures and learned more about the initiative's mission of using art to build awareness about human and animal coexistence, he knew she would be a great fit for Jeffersonville and Sullivan County. As part of the Great Elephant Migration, Mama was first constructed by a community of over 200 indigenous artists in the Nilgiri Hills of Tamil Nadu in southern India. Elephants and humans coexist in this region, but their forests have become overrun with lantana, a bamboo-like flowering weed that destroys the natural vegetation the elephants rely on to eat. As a response, these artists took the lantana and sculpted it into art.
When you read about the artists and the artisans who make these elephants, they're really, I think, focused on a much deeper relationship with nature. And climate change is obviously an element of that. But I think they look at the world and they look at their interactions with nature differently than we do. They look at nature as a on a more spiritual level as part of a whole that humans are also a part of. And when they see this sort of invasive species, it's bringing things out of balance. And it has ramifications, you said, for elephants, but also for their waterways. And Sullivan County also has invasive species, particularly along the waterways.
From the Nilgiri Hills to New York City and now to Jeffersonville, Mama has made quite the journey, amazing viewers and spreading awareness about coexistence and indigenous art along the way. And community members at the weekly Jeffersonville Sunday Farmers Market have been delighted by her presence.
Well, I knew what it was about from social media before I saw it. I saw it during a farmers market, and it drew an enormous crowd. I thought people were coming down the street to come to the market, but they were all going to the elephant, and then they joined us at the market later.
That was Melissa Kavetsky, manager of Jeffersonville's Sunday Market. She told me about how Mama being there was already making people more aware of invasive species in Sullivan County's aquatic ecosystem. Walking by Mama for the first time, Susan and Steve of White Lake were fascinated to learn more about her and her story.
I actually think that it's very beautiful. I noticed right away that it was made out of bamboo, and I found it interesting, but now knowing its history makes it even more interesting.
As she painted Mama and the Jeffersonville Bake Shop garden that is filled with native plants to the Catskills, local artist Sharon Malloy talked about how the Great Elephant Migration inspired her to think about art and nature more globally.
Obviously, we don't think about elephants very much while we're living up in here in the Catskills. So it gives us, having that there is kind of, you know, gets us to think about animals, plants in other places, and what we're kind of all kind of, you know, how to help them, how to support them, and just knowing about them.
Huber and Cycli are proud of the local business initiatives they have helped to grow in this small town. And as Huber sees it, Mama's placement in the natural garden for the rest of the summer is just one more step towards a larger goal of improving local communities from the ground up.
We have thought about creating a garden that's accessible for the community. It was important to us when we bought that property to make it more than just a commercial space. We really wanted it to be the heart of Jeffersonville and the community and have it open to everyone. And I think bringing in things like Mama to enhance the community, bringing in a garden, just trying to make the space more livable for everyone has been the goal. And I think we've been joined by a number of other people and preceded for that matter. There are other people doing this in addition to us. And to Lauren and to me, having art in the town is a really important aspect of having a healthy community.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
And that's our show for this week. Thank you to Genevieve Hartnett for that fun report from Jeffersonville and to Rachel Marks from the Pike County Conservation District for her wisdom and reflections. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Thanks for being here with me. Up next, it's Travels with Triggs on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, NPR. Catch you next week.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Morgan Outdoors. Celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail. Morgan-Outdoors.com.
Hi, I'm Debbie Fisher, and I'll be guest hosting Folk Plus once again this week. I'll be playing tracks submitted by folk artists from all over the country.